October, Year of God, 892. 1. Helen Island, Howell Bay, Kingdom of Caris. The breeze piled whitecaps across King's Harbor as Empress Charlian stepped out onto the battlements of the citadel. It was a most impressive sight, she thought, gazing down at the tiny model ships lying at anchor across the sun-sparkled, white-veined blue marble. The wind was a cool, vigorous relief from the day's heat, and the flags and banners along the battlements danced and clapped wildly, as if applauding the scene stretched out before her. Edward Seahamper, on the other hand, seemed less impressed by the spectacular vista than he was relieved by the fact that up here on the battlements she was safe from any lurking assassins. "I really don't believe you're going to be required to sell your life dearly in my service, Edward," she said to the man who had spent his life keeping her safe since she was a little girl.
"With all due respect, Your Majesty, I really don't think so either. Not today, at any rate."
She turned her head, gazing at him with a fond smile. Then the smile faded just a bit, and she reached out and laid one hand on his upper arm. "Do you still think this was all a dreadful mistake, Edward?" she asked, her quiet voice almost lost in the rippling thunder of the flags snapping and popping on the breeze.
"Your Majesty, it would never have been my place to say anything."
"Don't be silly, Edward." She squeezed his chainmail-covered arm. "I don't believe you've actually had to say anything since I was 11." Despite himself, the guardsman's mouth twitched on the shivering edge of a smile, and she laughed. "Edward, Edward!" She shook his arm gently. "It's such a pity you've spent so much time working on that poker face of yours, when the only person you really want to fool can read you like a book."
"Well, it's hardly my fault you've always been too smart by half, Your Majesty," he replied.
"No, it's not. And you still haven't answered my question. Do you still think this was all a dreadful idea?" Seahamper looked at her for a moment, then turned to gaze out over the harbor. It wasn't often he and the Queen, "Empress, you dolt," he corrected himself, found themselves alone like this. Indeed, she'd had even less privacy now than she'd had when she was only the Queen of Chisholm.
"Your Majesty," he said finally, his eyes still on the galleons anchored so far below them, "I don't know. I have to admit the Emperor's a better man, a better husband for you, than I'd ever truly hoped you'd find. It's good you've found someone I think you can actually love, and who can love you back."
He looked at her at last.
"It's not many a king or queen that can say that when all's said and done. But whether or not this Empire of Caris is a good idea or a bad idea, that's more than I can say."
"It was only a matter of time, you know, Edward," she said softly. It was her turn to turn back to the anchorage, her eyes unfocused as they stared into the blue distance of Howell Bay, stretching limitlessly to the diamond-hard horizon beyond the harbor breakwater. "Whatever I wanted, whatever I might have preferred, the day was coming when I would have had no choice but to defy the Council of Vicars on my own. I'd always been afraid of that. When Clinton and the rest of the group of four decided to destroy Caris and to use us to do it, I knew my fears had been justified." Seahamper folded his hands behind him in a parade rest stance, looking at her sword-straight spine. "And then, somehow, Caris survived. Not just survived, but devastated the fleet sent against her, including my own. And while I was still wondering what I was supposed to do, how Chisholm and everything I cared for might somehow find a way to survive, Caleb proposed." She shook her head, breathing deep of the tropical air. To her northern sensibilities, Caris was often swelteringly hot, and the sunlight had to be experienced to be believed. She was glad the healers had advised her to be careful about exposing herself to it. One or two members of her party, including Myra Lucas, who'd been less cautious, had experienced agonizing sunburns as a result.
But those things were as much a part of the exotic beauty with which Caleb's kingdom had entranced her as the year-round fresh fruit, the coconuts, the rich and varied cuisine, and the spectacular forests crawling up the flanks of the Carizian Mountains like tropical green fur. It was all so different from anything she'd grown up with, like some sort of magical fairyland, and yet there were so many similarities between Carizians and her own Chisholmians. Differences, too, of course, perhaps even more of them than there were similarities. But if the differences were more numerous, the similarities were vastly more important, because under the skin, where the hearts and souls lived, they were so much alike.
"Your Majesty, the Duke doesn't approve," Sea Hamper said very quietly as Charlian's silence stretched out, and she drew a deep, sad breath.
"No, he doesn't," she admitted.
Halbrook Hollow had made his ongoing opposition to and resentment of her marriage to Caleb abundantly clear. Not publicly, perhaps. Even the Queen's or Empress's uncle had to be careful about challenging her policies in public. And however much he disapproved, he would never have permitted himself to show open disagreement for a whole host of reasons. But Charlian knew. So did most of her advisers, and while he might not have voiced open disagreement, his attitude made it abundantly clear that his fundamental sympathies lay with the Temple Loyalists, not the Church of Carus. That much was becoming unhappily apparent to almost everyone.
"Including Caleb," she thought sadly.
Her husband had never explicitly mentioned her uncle's feelings, but the very way he hadn't mentioned them told someone as perceptive as Charlian a great deal.